Welcome to Sports Day Cowboys, a podcast all about the Dallas Cowboys, brought to you by the Dallas Morning News. I'm Michael Gelkin.
And I'm Calvin Watkins. We're just two Cowboys beat writers having a weekly real talk conversation about the latest with the team, including interviews, analysis, and debate. You know what, Michael? The Cowboys can't stop the run.
It is their number one problem, Calvin, no doubt. We'll take a closer look at the run defense, which Micah Parsons has called a fire. Can the Cowboys learn to contain it? They couldn't against the Green Bay Packers. This would be a good week to start against Dalvin Cook and the Minnesota Vikings.
Michael, this week we'll be joined by former Cowboys and Lions wide receiver Roy Williams from his home in Odessa.
It all starts now on Sports Day Cowboys.
Last week, Michael almost made Mike McCarthy cry. And in the Packers game, Aaron Rodgers actually made the man cry. The Packers upset the Cowboys and saved their season.
I don't think, actually, Mike McCarthy was brought to tears. Nothing that we saw, but no doubt the disappointment. McCarthy himself said this wasn't just another game for him. He wasn't going to lie to people, the public, fans, and say that it was. You heard in the locker room, Calvin, guys talking about we wanted to win that game for Mike. And I don't know, during that long drive back from Green Bay to Milwaukee, which is a lot of fun at 11 o'clock at night.
It is a lot of fun.
Calvin snoring in the passenger seat, got David Moore resting his eyes in the back. One thing that before you all rested as I was driving, we were talking about is, man, it didn't feel like just another loss. It felt like they got exposed in some really critical areas.
You know what? We've been talking about the run defense has been a disaster all season, and teams are not afraid to run against them. I think that's just evident. But, yeah, they did get exposed in a lot of ways, especially against the run defense. Some of the young guys made critical mistakes. Your boy Jalen Tolbert, who everyone has been praising that he's going to be this fantastic receiver, the man doesn't even know how to line up on sides. I mean, what are we doing here?
That was bad. And I'm curious what Roy Williams, the former Cowboys wide receiver, will have to say when we get to that in our next segment. But back to the run defense, you are right. We've seen this all season where I think back to the very first drive for the year where the way that the Buccaneers were attacking the Cowboys defense on the edge, on the perimeter, it's something that they haven't been able to show yet to NFL teams that they can slow down, they can stop it. And until you do, you're going to see it again and again and again. And the Cowboys understand that. I remember talking last week with Quentin Bohanna, and you know, he's this big, you know, nose tackle. He and Jonathan Hankins are the guys in the interior of this defense, an obvious run situation, sometimes normal down and distance. But you know, they're the guys you want not rushing the passer, but stopping the run. And when they're in the game, Bohanna said, they're doing these outside, you know, zone concepts or stretch plays or doing, you know, all these different things to kind of just get the ball on the perimeter, get the ball on the perimeter. And that's what they know is coming. And it just speaks to the struggles is that nothing that the Packers did schematically, I think, really surprised the Cowboys. It's that they haven't been able to execute it yet. And that's where the frustration is. It's palpable on this team right now. They know they've got to get better in this area to be the type of defense that they want to be. And right now, Dan Quinn and others are still optimistic. Quinn saying on Monday, he believes he has the guys in the locker room to do it.
The reality is teams are running up the middle on them and teams are running off the edge on them and gaining big yards. And I asked Dan Quinn the other day, I said, is it a physicality issue? I mean, because guys are lifting weights, right? Guys are eating protein shakes and all that kind of stuff. At some point, your big boys got to stop their big boys. I mean, this is a physical game. You know, forget the scheme. This is a physical game, football, especially in the trenches. And the Cowboys are getting pushed. Jerry Jones was on the radio the other day saying, I don't think we're getting big boyed. I don't think Jerry's seeing the same game that we're seeing. You know, when they run off the edge, are the linebackers actually fast enough to get to the edge to make tackles? You know what I'm saying? Can the defensive ends, whether it's DeMarcus Lawrence, whether it's Micah Parsons, if he's out there, or Dorrance Armstrong, if he's out there, can they hold up those tackles so somebody, whether it's a safety, whether it's a linebacker, can come up and run support and make a tackle, make a play on the ball carrier? And it's all about the physicality. And there's a lack of physicality when I see this run defense. It's just what it is. And this week, Michael, they're going to play another pretty good team. And Dalvin Cook, who's averaging like 80 yards a game, in the Vikings.
Yeah, I'm watching right now, literally on my computer. I've got a Dalvin Cook touchdown run from last week, and it's against the Buffalo Bills, 81 yards in Buffalo. And now you go to Minnesota. It's going to be a loud. You and I talk about U.S. Bank Stadium. It's our favorite stadium in the league.
Whoa. Maybe it's your favorite stadium in the league. I'm not going against Jerry Jones and the Cowboys now. You're on the island by yourself there, buddy.
Oh, is it your favorite visitor stadium? Is that what it is?
I like Mercedes-Benz in Atlanta, too. And SoFi is pretty nice. And I like the Link. And I like the Link in Philly.
Well, you like a few others. So for me, I go ahead and I just choose my pick. And for me, it's U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis. It feels new, but also feels like a football stadium. You know, like unlike Levi's in Santa Clara, it just feels like a bunch of architects who construct college campuses decided, hey, let's go ahead and build ourselves a football stadium. U.S. Bank is different. Anyway, they're going to that place, and it's going to be loud, and the Minnesota Vikings aren't going to need the silent count like they did up in Buffalo. And it's, you've got Dalvin Cook, who had 14 carries, 119 yards, and a touchdown in that upset win. It's going to be maybe the toughest challenge that the Cowboys could ask for at this point in the season is slowing down this Vikings offense, because it's not just Cook. It's also that guy, Justin Jefferson.
Woo!
You saw that catch. Pretty damn good.
Pretty damn good. I mean, he made this unbelievable one-handed catch. And I was there the night Odell Beckham beat Brandon Carr, made this spectacular one-handed catch at MetLife Stadium many, many years ago. And Dan Quinn said of the Jefferson catch, he said it was Beckham-ish, you know, and wow. I mean, me and you have always talked about these receivers on the Cowboys, and now they're going up against a very talented core of receivers in the Vikings. And if you're CeeDee Lamb, who's coming off one of his best games of the season, and Jerry Jones said probably his best game as a Cowboy, this is a game where you need to step up and say, you know what, bro? You want to be the number one guy? You got to show out here, because the Cowboys need this game, Michael. They can't afford – it's one thing to lose to the Packers, and we get that. But now you got to go on the road to Minnesota, and the place is going to be loud as you know what. And your playmakers, the very few playmakers that they have to show out. And this is a game where CeeDee Lamb, he needs to tell Kellen Moore, you got to get me the ball, bro. You got to get me the ball. Forget about Jalen Tolbert. Forget about Michael Gallup. Forget about whoever else. I got to get the football, because this is a game where your main people have to show up. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. I think to Kellen Moore's credit, he did a pretty good job of devising ways to get CeeDee Lamb involved against the Packers. 11 catches on 15 targets, 150 yards, 2 touchdowns. The first time that CeeDee had an 100-yard game since Minnesota Vikings game last year, last Halloween. That was an upset win, and it'll be an upset win again if the Cowboys can pull this off. To be clear, they needed that Packers game too. They didn't get it, and that really puts more onus on them to take care of business here, because you've got in very short order, on a short week coming up, you've got now the Vikings, who, I mean, on the short list of best teams in the NFL, NFC certainly, they look really good. And when they're playing and executing, they are very, very, very good. You got them. And then on Thursday, Thanksgiving, the New York Giants come to town. And they are clearly not the pushovers that we thought. I thought by this point in the year, they would have faded. But here they still are. So you screwed up against the Packers. You had a 28-14 lead and you let it go. Now, this is when you execute. This is when you take care of business, because you really have no other choice. These conference games, these common opponents in the NFC, these matter in terms of tiebreaker scenarios. So they need to get one back.
A lot of people are blaming Mike McCarthy for that loss in Green Bay. And I'm not. You're up 14 points in the fourth quarter. You got to close the show. That's not on McCarthy. That's on the players. And I remember editor Damon Marks, he had sent this stat about the Cowboys, I think, are 195-0, or they were 195-0 when leading by two scores in the fourth quarter. That means they've won close to 200 games in the history of the franchise when you're up two scores. You got to win that ball game, bro. That's just how it is. And you don't win that game, and like you were saying, now it puts this Vikings game, puts you on the edge of the cliff. You lose to the Vikings, and if the Giants beat the Lions, you know, this weekend, then the Giants can run the ball. Saquon Barkley is having probably the best year since he was at Penn State, you know, and he is totally healthy. They love that coach. The defense is playing pretty good in New York. And, yo, this is your Super Bowl on Thanksgiving Day against the Giants, and we'll talk about that next week. But you can't lose this game against Minnesota, and even though I think the Vikings are going to win this game because I just think they're a better team. And you had said something that was interesting. You used the word upset when it came to the Vikings beating the Bills. Hey, man, the Vikings are a pretty good team. I mean, you know, the Eagles lost Monday night to Washington. And I don't know. Maybe Minnesota's the best team in the NFC.
No argument here.
Damn.
Well, I'm sure we'll find something to disagree by the end of this podcast. Typically how it works around here. I want to reiterate something that we want to be part of this show. If we have our way, it's every week. Hearing from listeners, hearing from Cowboys fans, hearing from Dallas Morning News subscribers, we want the voice of the fan in the show. We want this to be an extension of your following this team. We have ourselves a question from a listener. Let's cut to him right now.
Hey, guys, this is Tony in Atlanta. Hey, question. Are Cowboys players and Jerry and everyone actually recruiting Odell Beckham Jr., with the exception of Micah, or are they just answering questions favorably, you know, without really causing a stir? Seems like it's being looked at like they're actively recruiting when they're just answering questions. Also, let's give Brett Maher his flowers right now. I know it's half a season left, but let's get a man his flowers. He's been way better than anyone expected when he was signed. Thanks.
Tony, that's a fantastic question. I'm going to say this about Odell Beckham and the Cowboys players. Yes, they answer questions because we ask the questions. That's how it goes in journalism, okay? Do they actually want Odell Beckham Jr.? Michael Gallup said, why wouldn't you want a Hall of Fame player? There's a lot we can learn from him, very similar to Amari Cooper. CeeDee Lamb, a guy who me and Michael debate about whether or not he's the number one guy. Yes, he wants Odell Beckham. Dak Prescott, the guy is the highest paid player in franchise history. He wants Odell Beckham. I don't think it's about, oh, we're just saying it because the media is asking us this. I truly believe they want this man. No?
I agreed. Yeah, there's no doubt that the Cowboys want this guy from a front office standpoint, from a coaching staff standpoint, and in that locker room. I don't think it's just guys answering questions, like talking to guys off camera, being a little more casual. You can tell that this is something that the players between themselves are actively discussing. Now, they're not talking about it ad nauseum the way that it's become in media, but they are genuine that they want him. And when they're answering these questions that they are getting, they're making sure that they're answering it. They're not just answering it with like a 7-word answer. They're taking their time and they're devoting thoughtful responses because of how they feel about Odell Beckham. A lot of the guys have met him, so it's personal for them about adding him potentially to their locker room. But you know what? Odell Beckham Jr. has a choice to make. The ball is largely, it seems, in his court, and the Cowboys got to continue winning games, got to get back to winning games to show that they are the type of contender that he seeks to join.
Yeah, Beckham's not going anywhere, especially to a team that he thinks is going to be the 7th seed and get knocked out of the first round of the playoffs. But, Tony, based on your second question, I really don't care. But my man, Michael Gelkin, cares about this. So, Michael, take it away.
Kickers are people, too, Calvin. Kickers are players.
They are.
Sometimes I find that I probably write most about special teams on our Cowboys at the Dallas Morning News. You think that's
really?
You think that's a fair statement, Calvin?
I'm gonna have to read the paper to find that out.
I think there's no doubt that Brett Maher deserves a lot of credit, and I don't think in any way the Cowboys' decision to opt against a 53-yard field goal in overtime was because of a lack of belief in Brett Maher. He's done everything to make the Cowboys confident about his ability to make a kick that is makeable. But they felt in that stadium with the way the wind was, I mean, you looked at Mason Crosby's attempt in the first half. Golly, that wasn't even close. That was the same post that we're talking. So Cowboys just felt like in overtime, their best bet was rather than settle for a field goal that probably misses, then setting up Aaron Rodgers with great field position, they would give it a go on fourth down. And obviously, it didn't convert. And you saw Mike McCarthy slam his headset, did not cry, Calvin.
He didn't cry? Oh.
You know what would have been a difference maker in that situation, though?
Tell me.
Jalen Tolbert doesn't jump or isn't standing in the neutral zone. That puts you 5 yards closer. If Connor Williams wasn't called for a holding, and we can argue about the sell job that that defensive lineman did on the Packers, if that call wasn't made, then we're not even talking about a 53-yard field goal because that negated a long run. Cowboys have been at the 26-yard line, first and 10, instead of second and 19 at their own 49. So that really changed that final possession for the Cowboys that game. So we're talking Brett Maher, that there's a lot of belief in him, but as it related to that particular moment, it was not about Maher. It was about the situation.
Oh, yeah. Now, Maher has had a really good season. He has solidified that position, I would say.
God, you think so?
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's better than your boy Greg DeLegge Zuerlein. But we like Maher. He's been here before. You've talked to him a lot about his, you know, mental health coach and all those kinds of things, but I don't care. It's the kicker. I only care about the kicker if he wins the game or he loses the game. But, you know, I'm happy that you and Tony could talk about Brett Maher a little bit.
Well, let's talk to Roy Williams. We hopped on the phone with the former Cowboys wide receiver. He credits his post-NFL career path to the Detroit Lions going 0-16. Mm. We hear from him next.
Sports Day Cowboys with Michael Gelkin, and our special guest is one of my favorite people in the great state of Texas, maybe even the world even. It's Roy Williams, the former wide receiver. Hi, Roy.
Hey, what's going on?
Michael, say hi to Roy.
Hi, Roy. Thanks for having us. Unlike Calvin, I had a chance to cover you during your time in Dallas, but it's a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah. Nice to meet you, man. Glad to be on.
Yeah, Roy, if everybody remembers, played in the league for about 9 years, three with the Cowboys, got here from a trade with the Lions many moons ago.
Man.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I remember when that trade happened. They gave away three picks, including a first-rounder, and they gave you like $800 million, and it was all good.
Yeah, two first-rounders. Throw that in there.
That's right. It was two, one in 09 and the one that current one. That's right.
Yeah, that was an expensive decoy, man.
An expensive decoy it was. But it had to be kind of a dream because you were from Texas. You played college ball at Texas. It had to be kind of like, man, I'm playing for the Cowboys, right? Or no?
Oh, absolutely. Especially coming from, you know, Detroit, who, you know, I love Detroit Lions. But, you know, we just weren't winning. You know, and I was just so used to winning and wanting to win and being the Super Bowl and all that stuff. And, you know, when the trade happened, I didn't know if the fly to Dallas or walk to Dallas. Like, how can I get there as fast as possible? But, you know, sometimes, you know, the grass isn't always green on the other side. So a lot of times I sit here and think about what it could have been with me and Megatron staying there with Stafford. How could the Lions have been at that point?
I know, it's kind of crazy. You know, right, Michael? Like, you look at Stafford, and he won a Super Bowl with the Rams, and, you know, Calvin goes to the Hall of Fame. It is crazy how much talent you guys had with the Lions.
Right. Yes, sir. Yeah, and you know, Stafford wasn't there at the time. You know, I went through 50 million quarterbacks in Detroit. People ask me all the time, you know, who did you catch the ball from Detroit? I said, how much time do you have? So I've always said I want to sit down and write all the quarterbacks that I've played with in Detroit.
Well, but your favorite had to be my boy John Kitner, though.
Oh, that was he was, that was my favorite. He's the best quarterback that I've played with. Man threw for over 4,000 yards in two seasons in a row at Detroit and still didn't get no love, man. And I mean, this was before it was a throwing league, you know, it was still kind of balanced, and Kitna, man, I love him as a player and as a person.
I was looking at the Cowboys history book at wide receivers who had 100-yard games before at Lambeau Field. CD just did it. But before that, Miles Austin in 2008, and the last one, Roy. I'm sorry. You know what? You were the last one because Miles Austin did it in 08. You did it in 09. So you were the last guy to do it. I was curious, what do you remember about that game, that atmosphere, and can you maybe identify a little bit with CeeDee Lamb and the performance that he just did, which was also in a loss as the game was with the U experience?
Yeah, so I believe we were going into that game. There was Charles Woodson was there with the Packers, I believe. And I think he kind of threw us for a loop with guarding Jason Witten. I don't think the coaches really thought that that was going to be part of it. And so, you know, it was pretty smart on the Packers' part to, you know, put their best corner on our number one receiver, quote-unquote, which was Jason Witten. So, I mean, Lambeau is a very historic place. And, you know, you want to get that win there. You know, you just want that on your resume of not only playing there, but winning there. And CD having the performance that he had this past week was pretty good. I hate that they lost. You know, and any person that, you know, catches that many balls and has that many yards and touchdowns, they would rather have one catch for 3 yards and get a win instead of those kind of stats and get an L.
What's it like to play on Lambeau Field?
Man, it's just, I don't know, man, it's just weird. One time we played with the Lions and we were winning 13-0. It was a Sunday night game. We were winning 13-0 and it was a cool night. You know, it was not cold, but it was a little cool. And we come out in the second half, the wind is blowing, the fog blew in, it's dropped 15 degrees, and we lose the game to Brett Favre 14-13 or 15-13, whatever it was. But it was just that magical, you know, it's just kind of, I mean, it's part of NFL, you know, and it's, I'm glad to be one of the guys on this earth that have gotten to play on that field.
That's awesome. How much you follow the Cowboys these days? Like earlier this episode, we were talking about Cowboys run defense and some of the issues that they're having there and not being able to stop really much of anyone of late. Do you follow the Cowboys? Do you follow kind of what their season has been and all that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I follow just the league, right? Living in Odessa, you get the Cowboys every week on TV. With that being my former team, I pay attention to them. And, man, they're having a great season. I want people to understand it's not very many teams that's going to go 17-0. Like, you're going to have some L's. It's when can you get hot to go into those playoffs? Mm-hmm.
This week they got Minnesota on the road. Now, obviously, you never played at U.S. Bank Stadium, but you've played in the Metrodome and playing for the Lions for those years. But when you look at the Vikings and the Cowboys, you know, the Vikings got some studs at receiver. Mm-hmm. And when you look at that game, is this going to be like a high-scoring game just because of the type of firepower both of these teams have?
Well, it's going to be very interesting. I like the Diggs versus Jefferson matchup. That's one that I'm going to watch. I don't know if Diggs follows the number one guy every week, but he should step up to this challenge here, right? Because this is best on best. So I'm looking for that matchup there, but I'm also looking for what the Vikings are going to do after that. Are they going to get Thielen involved? Can they run the ball with Cook? Can the Cowboys stop the run? Right. So, mm-hmm. And then everybody's talking about Dak and the offense and, you know, hey, got to get Dak a little bit. I mean, Dak was a little rusty. I mean, he's been off for five, six weeks. Now he's just getting his groove back. So he's got to still get that timing back and his rhythm back with the offense. And I think they're going to be just fine.
How much of that is a factor as a player where I think fans see, oh, a player's back in terms of back on the field, back in uniform, he must be back. But as a player, there's a lot of rhythm and timing to this game. What was your experience with that as a player? Of, you know, physically, okay, you're back in uniform, you're back on the field, but there's a mental side to this game as well, of course.
Yeah, absolutely, and it all depends on your injury, right? So I don't want to re-injure what I had injured the first time, right? So if I go in with a shoulder, like I'm not trying to lean this shoulder into the defender, you know, so I'm very cognizant of what I'm doing. Until I can get that confidence of, okay, I'm back, I'm good. So those things go through your mind, and it is. It's just like golf. You know, you can go out there and golf every day, and you become a good player. Take a week off and see what happens. right? And with these injuries, take 4 or 5 weeks off from golf and try to go back out there and golf. It's a totally different ball game. You got to get back into the swing of things. So there's no difference in with that in football. So that could be just fine.
Did you see that catch Jefferson made against Buffalo?
I did. I saw the debate of it being better catch than Odell Beckham, which I would give that catch better than Odell's catch.
Really? Why?
Absolutely. Fourth and 28, and this man had the ball. Like, he had the ball with two hands, and this man was strong enough with one hand to pull the ball away from his two hands and convert the fourth down, and you win the game. That is, you know, Odell had a great catch, you know, but they, you know, hey, nobody was on him.
No,
this one right here.
He got past Brandon Carr. Brandon Carr was there.
But nobody was on him.
Oh, in comparison to?
comparison to Jefferson. Yeah. Okay. This guy had the interception.
Mm-hmm.
He had the interception. He pulled it down with one hand. Not two hands, one hand. That's hard to do, man. That's hard to do. It happened so fast. I think that's what people, you see it in slow motion or whatever, but this, it happens really fast. So I got to give that one the best catch.
Okay. Me and Michael have this running debate about, is CD a number one receiver? I think you played the position a little bit. Is he a number one?
Right now he's a number one because Cowboys don't have anybody else. Right? No knock on those receivers. Don't take it like that. But if they would have kept Cooper, Cooper's my number one. CD's my number two that can work the middle of the field. Right? So it all just depends on that name. So right now, yes, he's the number one receiver. But in, for me, my opinion, no knock on him. He's a great receiver. He's just a number two. He's that guy that can take advantage of the middle of the field, linebackers, all that good stuff, and let the big dog eat on the outside. So that's the way I see it.
Yeah, and as Calvin and I, because we go back and forth on CD, what I often will say if Calvin says, you know, I don't know if CD is a number one, I ask him, okay, define, what's your definition of number one? And I would love to hear your take on that exact thing. Like, what, how do you define that term, number one wide receiver?
Yeah, number one receiver for me is that guy that's on the outside, right? That guy that's going to, you got to double this guy on the outside, right? That's your number one guy. That's how I define a number one receiver. The number two guy is that guy that, you know, comes in motion, gets in there in the slot, does all the good stuff, whoop-de-whoop-de-whoop, while that number one is eating up that double team so you can work that on the inside, right? So but right now with CD, you can double him wherever because there's no other threat, put it that way. But he's doing an excellent job of getting open, and offensive coordinator is doing a good job of scheming him to get open. So that's why I say right now he's the number one receiver with the Dallas Cowboys.
I have a technique question for you, because I don't know how much you watched at a Dallas-Green Bay game. But in overtime, Jalen Tolbert, who's a rookie, got called for offside.
Oh, my gosh. And he's looking at the ref, though. Like,
How do you mess that up? Tell me how you mess that up.
I don't know how you mess that up. I mean, when you line up a million, thousand, quadrillion times, I mean, you shouldn't be offside not one time, right? Because it's free. Check with the ref. Point at it. He'll tell you, back up. Okay, let me back up. I never check with the ref because I've lined up a million times. I know where I'm at on the field and if I'm offside or onside or whatever. So I don't know how he messed that up. I mean, a brain fart, I guess. And the funny part is, I wasn't offside. Like, yeah, you were offside. And he probably won't see that until, you know, Monday at film or whenever. So, yeah, just a brain fart.
No doubt. How about confidence as a young player or even as a veteran? I mean, Jalen is he's a rookie third-round pick, and he missed some time in the spring. And just, I don't know if that's the reason. Sometimes, like, we've heard that from the Cowboys coaches that he was just behind. But ultimately, you know, missing a couple weeks in the spring shouldn't derail your entire year. And it seems to be a case where he just hasn't been able to look or get comfortable fully. How does confidence come into play when we're talking about a young receiver who's fighting to get onto the field, and then when he does get on the field, a mistake like that happens?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for young kids, and that's just the growth. That's just the maturity of being a professional, right? I've always said this, and I got in trouble by Jason Garrett when I said this. You know, the offensive coordinator can make who you want the star, right?
Mm.
The coordinator can design things for certain people to get open, right, and to get the ball. And so sometimes as receivers, we feel like, hey, man, I can run that same thing. You know, I can be the one that can do that, you know, but coach don't believe in me, you know. And so I think a little bit of that happens is like he wants those opportunities and aren't getting them. And then maybe his number was called on that play and he gets excited. So I'm offside because I'm about to get this ball. I'm just lining up. I'm ready to go. Dang it, I'm offside. Right. So it's just a little maturity, being a pro and understanding the game of how it all works.
Your transition out of football, I think it's in general for a lot of guys, it's something that people struggle with because it's just such a different thing to go from being an athlete and all that accompanies that and it being your specialty, your passion, to transitioning to something off the field. How was that experience first like for you and where has it taken you today?
I mean, that I don't know if I can say cuss words, but that stuff there was hard, man. that was hard. I understood the Brett Favre syndrome, right? Like, I want to go back and play. But then you think about practice. Like, I'm not going to go out there and run all these miles and practice and go out there and be a decoy, right? Like, it's not going to happen. But you missed everybody says that you missed the locker room. Right. You miss those guys. You miss the jokes. You miss the stories. You just miss that environment. Right. So it was very, very, very hard for me. Then when you sit here and watch the games on Sundays, you know, everybody else is watching it a certain way. I'm looking at the overfront or underfront and, you know, the rotation of the safeties and all that stuff. They're just watching the quarterback and where he hands the ball off and what they're doing. So it's totally different. And it was very hard. And now I'm good. I'm 40. Right. Like I'm not Tom Brady. I'm not T.O. trying to come back and play. You know, I just love watching football and watching these young kids like C.D. Lamb do what they do. And, man, it's just a great feeling to be a part of history. I tell people all the time, it's only 1,696 guys that get to play this game every year in the world. 1,696. But everybody can coach it now. Everybody can tell you what McCartney should have did and what he did wrong, my bad, but only 1,696 actually get to play this game, and I was one of them.
How did you get into creating your own vodka line and those kinds of things?
Yeah, man, I wasn't a drinker, man. I wasn't a drinker at all. I didn't drink in high school. I didn't drink in college. I drank my first drink. I took my first drink when the Lions were 0-16. Now I got traded at that 0-4, 0-5 mark to Dallas, but it was going to be bad. Like 0-16 was ridden. Like there's no way he could have brought in Peyton Manning. It didn't matter. He was going to go 0-16. So during that time, I was like, man, I gotta, you know, everybody's like, hey, let's go out, let's do this. Boom, boom. I'm like, all right, let's go. I wasn't much of a club guy or nothing like that, and went out and everybody's drinking. And I was like, no, I don't drink, man. And I was like, man, forget it. Yeah, give me something. Give me something fruity, though, something that tastes like Kool-Aid. But they gave me a vodka lemonade. And I drank it, and I was like, there's no alcohol in here, right? Like, all I could taste was lemonade. I was like, oh, man, y'all messing with me. Well, about two of these drinks in, I was like, man, what is this feeling? Like, why am I – what is going on? And I was like, oh, okay, there is something in here. Okay. So anyway, so long story, when I was done, everybody talked about alcohol and how much money it makes and all that good stuff. And so I was like, well, why not? Why not give it a shot? You know, and so my first deal was vodka, obviously because that was my first drink. So I have a regular vodka, and my one flavor that I have, believe it or not, is strawberry lemonade. Because that's what I had. So there's some symbolism there with my stuff. And, man, it's going good, man. It's very slow. You know, Tito's has been around for going on 26, 27 years or so, 25, 26, somewhere in there. And I'm hitting that 7-year mark. So, you know, it's a slow process because I don't have the endorsers and the influencers and all that good stuff. I'm just taking it as slow as I can go and just keep on trucking.
We can be endorsers, couldn't we, Michael?
That's right. MVP Vodka, right?
That's right. That's right. MVP, yeah. It's kind of sporty, but we say everybody's an MVP, man. Don't matter if you're a plumber or a firefighter, a doctor, or a basketball player. Everybody's an MVP.
And so if the Lions didn't go 0-16, I mean, MVP Vodka might not, who knows?
It would not exist.
Well, Roy, we appreciate the time, man. I know you could probably coach like Jeff Saturday can somewhere, but
oh man, yeah, I just put that on my Facebook. Hey NFL, I'm ready to coach.
Yeah, Roy, thank you so much for joining us. Awesome chatting with you. Glad things are going well, and congratulations on the newborn.
Hey man, I appreciate it.
I promise you, Calvin, Roy Williams is not the only man the Lions have driven to drinking. And a fun fact. How rare is an offside penalty on a wide receiver this season? I looked. It actually happened once earlier this year. New Orleans Saints first-round pick Chris Olave. Rookies, it happens. So to disagreements, like ours about Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard, I Disagree is next.
Hey, listeners. This is Damon Marks. I'm the Cowboys editor for the Dallas Morning News. That includes the Sports Day Cowboys podcast that you're listening to right now. What I love about this beat is the nonstop news cycle that is the Dallas Cowboys. But beyond that daily adrenaline rush, being able to reveal the human side of the players you watch on TV is a privilege. Calvin and Michael talk to these players each week to bring you the behind-the-scenes stories that you can't get anywhere else. If you want to support this good work, it's easy. Just subscribe to the Dallas Morning News and become a member. You'll find a special offer just for listeners at dallasnews.com/listen.
At some point, Ezekiel Elliott will return to the football field. Yay! And when that happens, Tony Pollard should remain the starter.
I disagree.
What?
I think so often, and this is something of a kind of off track, but it's related. I think too often when Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard are discussed, it's this matter of or, where it's got to be one or the other. I think they are better together than they are if one of them is your main guy. And if you were to tell me if I could have only Ezekiel Elliott or only Tony Pollard for a game, you know, I'd have a hard time, even with the pass protection advantage to Ezekiel Elliott that he has. I would probably have a hard time saying Zeke just because Tony Pollard is that explosive. But we're talking about starter. And I look at the way these running styles are, and give me Ezekiel Elliott's ability to dent a defense. That's something that coaches talk about in the run game, just applying those dents early on, and you feel the defense wear down. And then by the second half, yeah, those runs, that those holes become a little wider, and the way that you're displacing defensive linemen is greater. That, to me, is why still I start with Ezekiel Elliott. That's my vantage on this debate.
I'm not saying put, you know, I'm not saying call the mortuary and say we're going to send Ezekiel Elliott's body over there. I'm just saying Tony Pollard should be the starter. And I'm a big Ezekiel Elliott guy. Let me tell you something. This guy, Tony Pollard, played 73 snaps, 73 against the Packers in overtime. So he proved that he can carry a heavy load. He's not just a running back that can run off the edge. He can run between the tackles. Is he the greatest blocker in pass protection? No. But we're not paying this guy to block oncoming rushers 52 times a game. Tony Pollard should be the starter for this football team. The team just plays better with him. They play faster with him. They can do more with him. Throw the ball out of backfield with Tony Pollard. They can run off the edge with Tony Pollard. They can run between the tackles with Tony Pollard. They can't run off the edge with Zeke Elliott the way they can with Tony Pollard. Did you see Malik Davis, Michael, in that game? When you talked about that Connor McGovern hold, Malik Davis was going right through that hole with speed. That's something Ezekiel Elliott does not have. Ezekiel Elliott is a fantastic guy. He's a nice running back. His body's breaking down. And you know how I am once the body starts breaking down. It's time to move on. Tony Pollard, it's time to move on from Zeke to get Tony Pollard on the field full time. That's the bottom line here.
I'm dizzy. I'm confused. I got motion sickness. You started off by talking about how you weren't trying to bury Ezekiel Elliott and say that he's all washed up. But the way you're talking about him here, the way you ended that, that's exactly what it sounds like you're doing.
That I'm burying him?
Yes, the way you're talking about. You're ready to move on to the Tony Pollard and Malik Davis show. And look, I think Tony Pollard is underused. The fact that he just, for the first time in his four-year NFL career, had more than 14 carries in a game, to me, is criminal. And you want to talk about last year when Ezekiel Elliott was going through the partially torn right PCL, the fact that they kept him going out there with a knee brace and then he'd aggravate it. You know, it's the whole thing that season was for Ezekiel Elliott when they had a perfectly healthy Tony Pollard, I thought that was poorly handled for him not to have his first 15-carry game. And we had to wait until Lambeau Field against the Packers for that to happen. So I'm not saying that Tony Pollard has never been, you know, underutilized. I would make the argument to the contrary. But you have Ezekiel Elliott, who the Cowboys have under contract. He's not going anywhere this season. They have Tony Pollard. Yes, use them both. Use them both. And you look at the way that the Cowboys started this past Sunday game, Tony Pollard got the start. First two drives, 3 and out. Now that happens with Zeke too. It happened against the Lions just a couple games ago. But it's not like starting Tony Pollard completely solves this Cowboys offense or has them on a different gear. They're better with them both, and they're better with Ezekiel Elliott applying the dents. But you know what? When Zeke does come back, yeah, let's see more of Tony Pollard. Let's see more of him. Let's blend them in more. I'm on board for that conversation, but I think their running styles, it's like a boxer. You're just telling them, yeah, I don't want any body blows in the first round. I just give me the haymakers. Let Ezekiel Elliott do his thing and deliver those body blows in the first quarter.
When the time clock says 15:00 and the Cowboys have the ball, first and 10 at the 25, Tony Pollard should be on the football field and Ezekiel Elliott should be on the sidelines. That's nothing against Ezekiel Elliott. He's a nice kid, but this team is a much better team with Tony Pollard as a starter. It's taken me a while to get there because, you know, I'm a Zeke guy, but I'm a TP guy right now. He should be RB1. That means running back number one on the depth chart.
Use them both. Oh, go ahead.
No, we're going to use them both. We're going to use them both. But you know what? When we start this football game, first and 10 from the 25, we hand it off to number 20, Tony Pollard.
And that's all the time we've got today on Sports Day Cowboys. Thank you, everyone, so much for listening.
The show is produced by Damon Marks, and you can stay up to date on every episode by following Sports Day Cowboys wherever you get your audio, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can also find the show by following the Dallas Morning News in those same players.
You can also find links to everything we do at dallasnews.com/listen. You'll find a special membership offer there just for listeners. And we want to hear more from you. We mean it. Email us your questions, your comments, and voice memos at dmncowboys, like Dallas Morning News Cowboys, @dallasnews.com. You can also ping us directly on Twitter @dmn_cowboys and on Facebook @cowboys fan central. Gosh, we're available. For the news, I'm Michael Gelkin.
And I'm Calvin Watkins. We'll see you next week.